On today's episode, we're taking a close look at high net worth individuals, those who have accumulated significant wealth and maybe face unique challenges and opportunities when planning for retirement. So tune in to John and I here on Middle Class Millionaire for this conversation around high net worth individuals.
Becoming a millionaire isn't just about growing your money. It's also about protecting and preserving your wealth by using the right financial strategies for your situation. Welcome. This is Middle Class Millionaire with John Choi. John has his Master's of Science in Financial Services and is a certified financial planner and the president of Epiphany Capital.
Hey everybody, welcome into Middle Class Millionaire with John Choi here with me to chat about today's topic. We're going to dive in and see if there's some extra things to think about should you be in this high net worth category. And sometimes people just wonder, well, am I, or how much, what is that? Like, what's the breakdown on that? So we're going to get into a little bit of that conversation here with John Choi, certified financial planner, today on Middle Class Millionaire. What's going on, buddy? How are you?
Good. How are you? I'm enjoying this nice, crisp fall weather.
Yeah. October's good, right? For that.
October's very good.
Yeah.
Leaves are changing. You know, kids are in costumes. Pumpkins are out. Yeah. Pumpkin spice lattes out.
Oh, geez. Come on. Come on. You're killing me, John. It's pumpkin spice everything.
It is. And I'm not a big pumpkin guy, but I got to tell you, Starbucks, their pumpkin spice stuff is good.
I tell you what, if you want to be disturbed, though, go look up a video of this of a health professional, health fitness person doing the iced pumpkin spice latte at Dunkin' Donuts. And what's in it and how much sugar. It's pretty staggering. So my wife watched that and she's like, well, I won't be having another one of those. So
yeah, probably half the cup.
Yeah, it literally is. Yeah, it's pretty wild. So go check that out. But let's talk about today's topic a little bit here, which is, you know, the high net worth individual. So let me ask you the first question, John. I'm sure it's probably subjective based on where you live and so on and so forth. But, you know, what is, you know, what's kind of that breakdown or definition that you would apply to someone who's a high net worth individual?
Well, you're right, Mark. It is very subjective. And it really depends on, you know, the area that you live in. So I'm in the Chicagoland area. And I'd say, you know, if you're like $3 to $5 million, that's high net worth.
Now, okay.
That you may be the poor guy at $5 million if you live on the Hamptons, right?
Right,
you probably couldn't even afford to live there.
Right. So we're not talking like Rockefellers or to get even more modern, Elon Musk, right? I mean, that's like ridiculous. That's like ultra stratospheric kind of high, right? So that's, you know, I think for the average person, and it's a lot more attainable than people might think, right? So sometimes we might hear a term like high net worth individual, and again, immediately think of something like $100 million or more, right?
Yeah, that's stratospheric.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. So in your practice and in the area, you know, folks who might have $3 to $5 million in that range, right? They've done a great job saving, or maybe they're, you know, doctors or things of that nature, depending on your profession, right? It could be a lot of different things, but you might find yourself in this arena. So let's talk about a few situations, unique situations that they may want to consider if they're not, you know, seeing a professional, hopefully they are, or just challenges that might present itself when you start getting over a higher amount. So let's just start with complexities first, John. You know, if you're going, and again, there's nothing wrong with any particular walk of life, but if you're going to work and you've got just a 401k that you've been pumping into for 30 years, you know, your tax strategy and your income bucket strategy is probably going to be much simpler. Not that that's wrong, just more simple for a planner to work through than maybe someone who's got multiple income streams and multiple, you know, tax scenarios they've got to deal with and just the complexities of having a lot more stuff.
Sure, absolutely. And trust me, sometimes simpler is better.
Oh, right? For sure. Yeah.
And so I would say to the folks that have their most of their net worth in their 401k, you know, that could be a blessing, in the sense that your situation is much more simple. And then also it does require, though, a little bit more planning, because everything is in a tax deferred bucket. And that is a cause for concern, so
right,
to speak,
right?
Because now you're at the mercy of the government, the tax rates, you know, are there any penalties coming out, so on and so forth. So
yeah. And so for high net worth folks, they may have you know, multiple things of real estate, like, you know, maybe not just a rental or two. They could have multiples, or they could have, you know, private equity investments, you know, global thing. And just there could be a lot more to deal with, and therefore needing a financial professional to kind of help, you know, sort all the puzzle pieces out. And I mentioned taxes. That's the next one here that's certainly going to be a really unique situation. You know, as it goes with having more money, you're going to have more of a tax target on your back.
Yeah. And so actually going back to the first point of complexity.
Sure.
I think if you have multiple buckets and multiple assets, it's absolutely critical to have a written balance sheet down, and not just something on the back of an envelope, mm-hmm. but something that is concrete, a balance sheet and a statement of income or cash flow. So we want to know where your money's coming from. And also we want to know where the assets are. And it's just not for me. It's for the non-financial spouse, because I have found that in a household, there's a financial spouse and there's a non-financial spouse.
Right.
And the non-financial spouse is, they're bebopping along all happy. And should something happen to the financial spouse, they have absolutely no idea where the money is, where the money's coming from, or where it's supposed to come from. And it's in a shoebox somewhere with statements that are scattered all over the place. So I think it's really important to have all the documents in one centralized place, or at least, you know, documented in a centralized place. Insurance policies, assets, retirement accounts, bank accounts, things of that nature.
Okay. And then talk to me about tax complexities for high net worth folks.
There are so many. The tax code is, 20,000 pages long or something like that, right? So the more that you have, I think there's more opportunity for you to take advantage of some tax deductions that the IRS will give you. But it's a conversation to be had with your CPA. But not only that, I think you have to do some good planning. A tax attorney would be a good resource for that. And a CFP, a Certified Financial Planner Professional, they would be able to have a tax conversation with you. And I think the CFP professional is really the one that is going to drive the tax planning conversation, mm-hmm. and you know where the opportunities are for a taxpayer to lower their taxes.
Yeah. And, you know, and if you're talking about today's conversation around folks with maybe that, you know, over that $3 million range, or, you know, 3 to 5 or whatever it might be for high net worth folks, obviously taxes are going to get more complicated. And so our next two points here to really imagine these are places folks are going to want to focus on is estates. And I'm actually going to roll these two together, these two pieces of the conversation, John. We can just kind of roll through them. But, you know, liability, again, of having more money means more of a target on you. And maybe, you know, estate planning takes on a bigger role. Maybe trusts are more, you know, in your conversation piece or something like that. So what's your thoughts on that, you know, from an estate side and from just the liability of having more?
So I'm going to roll my answer into both estate and liability as well.
Okay.
So I'm going to talk about trusts.
Right.
And most of the time we're talking about revocable living trusts. And there is a misconception among some people, not all, but some people who think that these revocable living trusts have some sort of an asset protection component to it. And nothing could be further from the truth.
Okay.
So in a revocable living trust, it doesn't even have its own tax ID number. It's your Social Security number. So it's really your assets. And it's just going to provide more of a better flow and a better experience for the next generation, quote unquote, inheriting the money.
Okay.
So it's an orderly and a predetermined flow of who's going to get your money. It's not really for asset protection, the revocable living trust.
Okay. Now, is there something that they should be looking at for protection in that side, though?
There are trusts that can be set up that way, but most people at 3 to 5 million, you know, probably not the forefront of the conversation.
Okay.
I think that what you should do is 3 to 5 million is really business owners, right? It's not for the W-2 employee who's going
right,
out there
right.
and making an hourly wage. So you have to really choose your business entity carefully, and also your retirement assets carefully, and asset location is big. So for example, I had a client who owned all these rental buildings, rental apartments.
Okay,
and,
sure. Commercial, right? Commercial real estate.
And, you know, old school, they owned it on their own. They had four buildings. And I said to them, I said, look, somebody slips and falls on your property. They can go after your, not just this property, but all the other properties, all your assets.
So is that is that an insurance conversation?
It can be, but also, and it definitely should be, absolutely. But I suggested to get them into LLCs, where it's going to provide some sort of a liability protection for the owner and the owner's assets.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, there's a lot more things to consider. Complexities, I think, being a good key word to use there. So let's talk about a few of the things that maybe people take for granted, or just don't maybe assume that they need as much as the folks who, you know, might have, let's say just $500,000 or $1 million saved for retirement, if you're in that 3 to 5 or even higher range, right? So it might be something like, you know, because I have such a higher net worth, I don't necessarily need to worry about withdrawal rate, right? So you have folks that say, I've got $1 million. Let's go with this kind of scenario here, John. I got $1 million. I'm going to do that back of the napkin math, and I'm going to do the 4% rule and pull 4% out a year off my $1 million. That's 40 grand. Bada boom, bada bing, I'm good. And so somebody who's sitting on 3 to 5 might say, well, I don't necessarily need to worry about that. I can take as much as I want because I have more. And that might be a little bit of false sense of security there because, you know, if you're living higher on the hog, so to speak, well, you might burn through it faster too.
Yeah, I like that, higher on the hog. So it may surprise you to learn that some folks who have $500,000 net worth when they retire, they're not worried about a thing.
Hmm.
And there are some folks that have $25 million saved up, and they're worried to death about their income. So I think this is more of a personality issue rather than a numerical or objective issue. There isn't the number is in your head. It's not in a textbook. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. You kind of get this false sense of feeling like, I'm going to be fine, right? So like some of the myths that I think fall around this category is the one that I just mentioned. And also, you know, maybe having at a certain net worth, you don't have to worry about income streams, right? Because you, like a lot of times where if you're listening to financial programs, they're talking about, hey, the income is the outcome, right? You know, income is the key to your retirement plan because it's about what you know, still getting those checks after you've stopped working, blah, blah, blah.
Yes. Yes.
So if you're sitting on $5 million, you may kind of put yourself into this false sense of feeling of, I don't necessarily have to worry about income because I got plenty of it. Again, I can pull as much as I want out when I want and be fine, within reason, obviously, right? But I think it's just kind of creates this false sense of, if you want to go with a number, you can say, I'm pulling 10% out versus the 4%, and I'll still be fine. But that's, you could probably burn through that pretty, a 10% withdrawal rate, you could probably eat that up pretty quick.
Very quickly. And then I would say, what if the market goes down? Then you're taking a double whammy.
And where do you have it, right? Where is that $5 million? So.
Yeah. And I mean, this is such a complex question and it depends on asset type, asset location. But a 10% withdrawal rate from the wrong asset could be that's pretty aggressive.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So, I mean, I think lifestyle is going to certainly play into this, just like any other thing, right? We've talked about it many times here on the show, John, where, you know, where you live versus where I live versus where somebody else might live and how you live is going to certainly, you know, play into those factors differently. There's a book called The Millionaire Next Door, right? A very popular book. And there's a lot of folks out there that are sitting on quite a chunk of cash and you'd never know it because they live a very modest lifestyle. And then there's other folks who, you know, have a good chunk of cash, but you know it because they're, you know, they flaunt it.
There's two guys that I can think of, probably, I want to say $50 million net worth folks.
Wow.
And one person flaunts it. And the other person, you would never know.
Yeah, exactly.
It all matters what's between your head.
Yeah. Well, okay. So how do you at Epiphany Capital, how do you help high net worth individuals? What are some of the unique things that you talk about or bring up or go through if folks are in that situation and feel like they need some help?
I just take them through the 7-step financial planning process that's outlined in this CFP Board of Standards, right?
Okay.
So you got to understand their situation and you just go through the 7 steps. And a lot of it now is behavioral biases, right? Again, going back to what I said before, people with $500,000 think they're fine and they're not. People with $25 million are can't sleep at night because they're worried about this and that. So, you know, we've got to have those behavioral conversations. I think that's going to be big. What about the guy that inherited, you know, $10 million of Coca-Cola stock from grandma, but can't sell it because they feel like they owe some duty of loyalty to a Coca-Cola company?
Oh, because you know, grandma loved it, so she gave it to me, so I should love it. Yeah.
Well, yeah, or a grandpa worked for Coca-Cola, right?
Right.
Grandma inherited it from grandpa when he passed away, and then now it's been passed down to you. So it's kind of like, oh, I'm betraying my family if I sell this thing.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's definitely no good.
So at the end of the day, would you say that high net worth individuals need a plan just as much as, I suppose, us regular worth individuals, for lack of a better term, right?
Yeah, even more so.
Yeah,
even more so, because there's complexity. There's a lot of moving parts. I mean, you know, you touched upon the guy with the 401k. It's worked there all his life.
Right.
Do you really need a plan? I mean, you do, but it's so much simpler than the folks with $15, $20 million with assets scattered all over the place.
Right, right.
And, you know, it's not maybe moving in a cohesive direction.
Yeah, so, I mean, financial strategy, I think no matter, you know, what you've got is important. I mean, you could even make the argument that somebody with crazy money, you know, $200-300 million, they still have financial strategies, right? Because they're living, obviously, a totally different lifestyle. And just like anything, you can go through it. I mean, how many stories are there of professional athletes or musicians that end up with nothing because they blow through it based on their lifestyle? Or even the lottery winners, right?
Yeah. Lottery winners, athletes and entertainers.
Yeah.
Remember, it's not what you make, it's what you spend, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so you got to put that away, and you can't spend money like water.
Yep. Got to have a plan, no matter regardless. I think, you know, you need an income plan, you need a tax strategy, you need all those same basic things that we would preach about to someone who's, you know, trying to retire after, you know, 30 years at the Ford plant, or just after working multiple jobs, whether you're, no matter what, I think no matter what walk of life you find yourself in, you need a strategy. You need to make sure that you're talking with qualified professionals and getting the right guidance for the type of life and the type of situation that you are in. And that's where a certified financial planner can help you, like John Choi. So if you need some help, reach out to him. You can find him online at johnchoi.net. That's johnchoi.net. You can get yourself onto his calendar and come in for that consultation and review as well. So you can book that book a call online. So just check that out again at johnchoi.net. And don't forget to subscribe to us on Apple, Google, or Spotify. You can find us on those three major platforms there, and just type in Middle Class Millionaire and you can find it that way, and follow the podcast. Check out past episodes as well as future episodes. John, thanks for hanging out, bud.
It was great chatting with you, Mark.
Yeah, absolutely. This is our early October, so we'll be back with more here in the month, and hopefully no more conversation around pumpkin spice, because we'll all be sick of it by then. And we'll see you next time as we get a little closer to Halloween here on Middle Class Millionaire with John Choi.
Take care, folks.
Epiphany Capital is a registered investment advisor, RIA, located in the state of Illinois. Epiphany Capital provides investment advisory and related services for clients nationally. Epiphany Capital will maintain all applicable registration and licenses as required by various states in which Epiphany Capital conducts business, as applicable. Epiphany Capital renders individualized responses to persons in a particular state only after complying with all regulatory requirements or pursuant to an applicable state exemption or exclusion.